I felt the slap of leather on my back as if someone else absorbed the blow, until the pain seared through soft tissue exploding across my spine. I had never been whipped before, though I had seen the scars of terrible whippings and beatings endured by the runaway slaves our family harbored on our farm. I felt ashamed and wanted to hide, nurse my wound, and drink whiskey until my mind and body numbed.
On this episode of the Dead Man's Hand podcast, you get the fourth chapter of the audiobook that focuses on Wild Bill's experiences as a mule boy at 19 years old, a defining event that propelled him west. Now, going forward, this is the only place where you can find free chapters of this book. Prior to this, we've made them available in other formats for free, but going forward, they are exclusive to you. We hope you enjoy this chapter and the book as it unfolds, and we hope you get a copy of it when it debuts in a few months, and we will keep you in the loop. Without further ado, here is Dead Man's Hand, Chapter 4, Mule Boy.
My first job taught me lessons in pain and humility as a mule boy, or hoggy, driving mule teams that pulled flat-bottom boats by rope up and down the Illinois-Michigan Canal, connecting Lake Michigan to the Illinois River. The towpath along the canal was a harsh taskmaster. Its four-foot-wide, manure-dusted path stretched for miles, shaded only by the occasional oak and maple tree. My only companions were the long-eared beasts of burden I guided along the way.
How are you holding up, Benjamin?
I asked my lead mule, stroking its shoulder as I walked alongside the team of six mules as we headed home from Chicago. I felt the imbalance in Benjamin's stride, and noticed he had been favoring his right leg all day since a hoggy cracked a whip that morning at the lock, spooking the entire team. Benjamin was older, stronger, and smarter than most mules, but also more prone to injury. If the captain discovered he had pulled a muscle, it would be reason enough to shoot him and sell him for meat.
It looks like you need a break.
Hurry up!
Captain Charles Hudson shouted from the stern of the boat, nearly 30 feet behind.
I'm paying you to keep us on schedule, not talk to jackasses. Our pace is too slow.
We're at the right pace.
I shouted back, refusing to push the mules beyond a steady 3 miles per hour, rather than the 4 or 5 the captain preferred. Benjamin needed a break, and a slower pace was the best I could provide.
If we're late, I'm taking it out on your ass.
You do, and I'll throw yours in the canal,
I returned. Maybe I should have feared Charles Hudson, who could fire me on the spot. But the captain depended on my expert control of the mule team hauling thousands of pounds of cargo that could capsize at the smallest misstep. There was too much money at stake for Hudson to risk his boat in the hands of someone less capable, even if they were more subservient.
At 18 and over 6 feet tall, I could throw a 200-pound bag of grain like it was filled with peanut shells. The captain both feared and admired his lowly employee.
I had no intention of quitting either. I needed this job to save for my move out west, thoughts of which kept me sane. Striking it rich, visiting towns bursting with lusty saloons and women, discovering uncharted forests filled with tribes hunting for scalps. It was the kind of life that made Kit Carson and Daniel Boone famous, and the only kind of life I could imagine for myself. Another mule team and its boat appeared ahead, moving twice as fast as mine. I could see the passengers sitting above deck, taking in the landscape in seats beneath umbrellas, with drinks in hand. Passenger boats attempted to appease their ticket buyers with a swift pace to Chicago.
Boat ahead! I yelled back to the captain.
I waved at the approaching mule boy and pointed to my right. In order to give us the right of way, the other boat's captain would have to steer around ours, while its mule boy, or hoggy, would have to stop his team and wait for his boat to catch up before dropping the rope slack into the water for our boat to glide over. Finally, I would carefully guide my team over their slackened ropes as their team took to the outer edge of the 10-foot towpath. However, the Chicago-bound boat's captain, a broad-shouldered man with a thick gray beard, stood up at the bow, pulled the pipe clamped between his teeth, and yelled,
"Give us the right of way. We've got passengers aboard."
"Did you hear him, Hoggy?"
Hudson barked, never addressing me by my surname.
"Give them the right of way!
I couldn't ignore my captain again, so I clicked my teeth and tugged Benjamin's harness until the team slowed to a stop. I waited for the boat to catch up and then started dropping the rope into the water.
Hurry up!
Captain Hudson snarled as the boat came alongside the mules.
Get to the side and let their team pass!
Obediently, I returned to the front and nudged Benjamin's harness. Let's go, boy!
The mule snorted and stomped its right leg in defiance.
What's the holdup?
Shouted the captain. This was the worst possible time for Benjamin to hint of any weakness.
We need to get moving or we'll have a big mess on our hands, I said, looking into the mule's giant black eyes as it nipped at its right shoulder.
I pulled out a crabapple, which the mule snapped up and chewed. But it didn't move its legs while Dandy on the left stood patiently waiting for Benjamin to lead, never taking the initiative herself as the barge ahead continued moving forward, showing no signs of slowing down. Rather than resort to whips and sticks like most uneducated mule boys, I spoke to my mules all day long, earning their trust with compliments on their efforts, sharing stories about every horse, mule, or donkey I had ever known, even singing hymns and nursery songs when I had nothing else to say. I learned long ago that mules are creatures of emotion, not beasts who submit to strength or fear. They are souls whose ears perk up at the sound of a voice they trust and want to obey. Captain Hudson waved to the other captain, and soon both boats and mule teams came to a stop at the edge of the canal, and immediately Hudson hopped off, a whip in hand.
I'll get those jackasses to move!
The whip cracked, and the mule team erupted in hee-haws and snorts, kicking and jolting forward. I grabbed Benjamin's and Dandy's harnesses, using my full weight to pull their heads down.
Hold up! Calm down! Calm down!
Benjamin stopped, whinnied, and nipped at Dandy next to him. I wrapped my arms around their necks as Hudson lifted his whip. With the mules settled, I ran at Hudson and grabbed his hand before he could strike again.
What the hell are you doing? I shouted at Hudson, whose face was bunched in a mess of scowling whiskers. If you get these mules too crazed, we're not going anywhere.
If you can't control them, I will!
Captain Charles Hudson didn't have the strength or height to overpower me, but he managed to push me away and pull back the whip, snapping it forward, the end of the whip, following like lightning after thunder. I felt the slap of leather on my back as if someone else absorbed the blow, until the pain seared through soft tissue exploding across my spine. I had never been whipped before, though I had seen the scars of terrible whippings and beatings endured by the runaway slaves our family harbored on our farm. I felt ashamed and wanted to hide, nurse my wound, and drink whiskey until my mind and body numbed. I was tempted to leave Hudson and this canal slavery forever and set off for my journey west, with or without money or supplies. Other men headed west with nothing and earned their keep as they went, whether as a hunter or scout or wagon master. But I couldn't let Hudson win so easily. He owed me money, and I owed Benjamin. I could nurse him back to health and maybe even take him when I left.
Never mind,
called out the other boat's captain.
We'll go around you, seeing that you're having trouble with that insolent hoggy.
I returned to my team, took Benjamin's harness, and pulled. As if sympathizing with his humiliated master, Benjamin returned to his steady pace. I had to muster all my self-control, swallowing my pain along with my pride as we walked over the other team's ropes and passed within a couple of feet. Their mule boy, a young lad of 14 or 15, yelled something at me with a mix of Chicago and an Irish accent that was hard to understand. The boat's captain added to his nonsense with a barrage of perfectly articulated curses, acknowledged with approval by his passengers in expensive hats and suits.
I turned to Benjamin and said,
"You're a stubborn ass, but a good one. If Hudson would ease up our pace, you could bear the pain."
I patted Benjamin's nose as he nuzzled against my shoulder. As I endured the physical pain of the whipping, the thought of working for men like Hudson filled me with dread. Moving out west would soon free me from the tyranny of such men. Out there, my skill with a gun would earn me respect and ensure my independence. When we returned that night, I removed my moccasins and inspected them beneath the lantern outside the stables, ignoring the pain in my back from Hudson's whip. I had just finished feeding and watering the mules and spent the good part of an hour massaging Benjamin's knotted muscle. But now I had my own ragged feet to attend to, Though I was so tired, I didn't care if I was hungry or thirsty or ached from head to toe. I was too tired to care about the pain humiliating my body and pride, which was good since I had little energy to nurse my hatred for Hudson. As if sensing my surrender to the only peace I'd known all day, Hudson called out to me. I stood up on my bare feet and walked towards the lock where the boats were tied, the moonlight painting inky shadows on the ground. I approached a group of men singing Irish tunes around a fire, a scene that would have lifted my spirits if not for Hudson's looming presence. Hudson, drunk and menacing, held a bottle in his hand, his breath heavy. I had no time for his drunken demands, let alone his sober ones, but was determined not to let him break my spirit, no matter what he had to say.
"Well, Captain, what is it?"
I muttered, contemplating a swift punch to his face to do what his drinking had thus far failed to do.
"Quinn left me. She's gone."
Hudson slurred, stumbling while managing to catch himself.
"What is it to me?" I retorted.
"You!"
Hudson shouted, stumbling step by step, attempting to follow the course of his accusing finger.
"You are the cause of all this!"
I knew Hudson's woman, Quinn, quite well. She was younger than him, with a strikingly beautiful face that turned heads wherever she went. She knew her allure and tormented Hudson daily by flirting with the mule boys and captains they encountered. She had even made advances toward me a couple of times.
"Take me away,"
Quinn implored me a week before, grabbing my shirt under the moonlight.
"You're a kind young man. I can make you happy. Just take me from here and we can start anew. I can't bear another night with that drunkard. If someone doesn't rescue me soon, I'll end it all."
As tempting as her offer was, I knew my aspirations for a life out west surpassed any promises Quinn could make, no matter how alluring she was. It was only a matter of time before she found someone else willing to rescue her from boredom.
"You're imagining things,"
I said, turning away from the captain, who could have blamed any man who crossed paths with Quinn.
"She told me,"
Hudson yelled, brandishing a bottle at me.
"She said you were with her, promised to take her away. You tried to steal her from me right under my nose."
Whether they were married was uncertain, but it seemed inconsequential to her. She flirted as she wanted, and though Hudson gave her chores on the boat, she came along less and less. In fact, I hadn't seen her around the boat for days.
"You think I'd still be here if I wanted to run off with your woman?"
I watched as Hudson stumbled backward when I approached him. I almost pitied the man. What could someone like him hope for, aside from a woman like Quinn? His boat might bring in money, but if it only made him angry at mules and mule boys all day and drove his woman away, what was the point?
"I know what I'm talking about, Hoji. I've come to finish what I started today,"
Hudson declared, determination glinting in his eyes. This was my opportunity. It wouldn't take much to put him down. But where was the challenge in that? What was the point if Hudson wouldn't even remember the beating or could dismiss it as a drunken mistake? As mosquitoes buzzed around us, I approached him.
"She ain't worth the trouble, Captain," I said, trying to defuse the situation. "Now get back to your boat before you get yourself hurt."
Hudson's eyes widened in the moonlight as he pulled back his arm to swing at me. I deftly turned, brushing past him, causing him to trip over his own steps. I walked away, leaving him moaning unintelligibly on the ground. Whether he was weeping over his loss or cursing the indiscriminate dirt in his face, I couldn't tell, only that life had treated him far worse than I ever could. The next day, Hudson was unusually quiet for the first few hours. Benjamin thankfully seemed fine, and there were no issues with his right leg. We made good time returning to our station and my living quarters. Hudson seemed in a better mood after dinner, showing up at the stables while I checked the mule's feet.
"That mule is slowing us down,"
Hudson stated matter-of-factly. "You mean Benjamin?" "No, he's fine. He's our best mule," I replied.
"I'm done with him. I bought another one. It's at the other stable. Go get it,"
Hudson informed me.
"What about Benjamin?"
I inquired.
"I sold him to Sully, who will turn him into dog meat,"
Hudson said, stepping toward the mule.
I pushed his hand away as he reached for Benjamin's harness.
"What are you doing, Hickok?"
Hudson referred to me by name for the first time since I could remember. I couldn't tell if he meant it to prove this was just business or that he hoped I would take the loss of my beloved animal personally. In either case, he was sober and serious.
"That mule, all these mules are mine. Now move! Your friend has an appointment with the butcher!
His intentions were all too clear now. I stepped in front of the small, miserable man. If there was no sport in hitting Hudson last night, he was fair game now. Hudson had succeeded in finding a way to hurt me, and I could do nothing about it except make him hurt back. He nearly ran into me. His eyes lifted as his mouth broke into a smile.
You want to fight? No! No, you had your chance last night, Hickok! I challenged you man versus man, and you could have beaten me senseless! But I'm sober, and I'm your boss, so if you're going to stand in the way of my business, you can leave without a cent of your pay and don't ever return. Not to this canal or any other. You won't find a job from Illinois to New York. Now get out of my way and let me get my mule!
I turned away from the ugly, demented captain. He wasn't worth giving up my dream. I stepped aside and allowed him to lead Benjamin away to the slaughterhouse. For some reason, Benjamin didn't resist Hudson's guidance out of the stable. But that was a mule always looking for a reason to frustrate you. The new mule that replaced Benjamin was younger, stronger, and far more stubborn, making my day difficult. Each time the mule refused to budge, I thought about Benjamin and how his stubbornness never aggravated me for some reason. I wondered how I had become so attached to a stupid mule. But that was no different than my life on the farm. I loved my mother's and father's farm animals, even the ones we butchered, and never developed the hardness of a farmer's emotions that my father and brother so easily maintained. By the end of the day, I was tired and frustrated, hating my life, even though my back felt a lot better after finding some butterfly milkweed along the trail, which I made into a paste and had another hoggy help me apply to my wound. The only comforting thought was that I had succeeded where most young men with true ambitions in my position would have failed. I didn't attack Hudson, despite the sorcery of his provocation. I withstood the temptations of Quinn, who would have sabotaged everything for me at no fault of her own. I continued the slave labor without complaint, even though every mule boy found camaraderie in the complaints of their shared miseries. If I had smaller ambitions, I might have found reasons to accept Hudson's abuse, or to love Quinn, or to fraternize with other mule boys. My father sacrificed his life for his own dream of fulfilling God's promise to people escaping the evils of slavery, without regard for his health or safety. He was always prepared, no matter who challenged him. He never swayed from his purpose. Even if his sons never understood the dignity and higher calling of supporting the Underground Railroad, he stayed true to his goal of helping every slave escape bondage. My father lived his life, as unglamorous as it was, without compromising it for anyone. Though my cause was more romantic than noble, at least I had one.
Well, look who's living the dream.
Lorenzo's voice felt so out of place and unexpected that I didn't know what to say or do until my brother entered the mule stable, took me by the shoulders, drew me close, and embraced me.
And you smell terrible.
Lorenzo?
Bill, remember, I'm Bill Hickok. Or you can call me William if you want.
I had to remind myself of Lorenzo's letters informing me that he went by our father's name, or Bill, as he attempted to take on the role of patriarch ever since our father died and our oldest brother Oliver left for California. I just couldn't wrap my mind around calling my brother by our father's name.
What are you doing here? I asked, as much confused as I was surprised.
He stood before me in one of our father's old church suits, though it was paired with a new purple tie and a top hat that made him look like a snake oil salesman trying to pass for respectable. He carried a carpet bag, as if he had something to sell me.
I'm here to rescue you from the slave work you've been doing,
he said, pinching his nose in disgust.
Let's talk outside the stable.
Why? You're acting like you didn't grow up on a farm.
And you're acting like you grew up like a peasant. Let's go.
The sun was barely setting over the bustling lock, where activity thrived. Captains checked their boats, mule boys searched for whiskey, and lusty conversations filled the air as sellers of goods lit their lamps, eager to collect anyone's money. From the top of the bank, I noticed Hudson exiting the one and only saloon in the area, likely heading to his boat for the night. He had a woman who was not Quinn on his arm. A woman with dark hair and eyes, not particularly attractive,
whom I recognized from the area. I didn't know if she was someone's wife or a prostitute. So much for a life without distractions. At least his mind wasn't going to be on me, or so I thought.
Listen, brother,
Lorenzo continued, setting down his bag and opening it.
I have an important announcement.
He pulled out a bottle of whiskey and two shot glasses, handing one to me.
What? Are you getting married or something?
Ha! That would be the news. I think Mother would throw a party for all of Homer if that were the case.
I held out my glass as my brother tucked his into his suit pocket. He bit the cork off the half-empty bottle with his teeth and filled my glass three-quarters full before doing the same for himself. Replacing the cork, he set the bottle on the ground, raised his glass, and motioned for me to do the same.
Well, are you going to tell me what we're celebrating, or did you just get bored of that dirt trap of Homer?
You, my dear brother, are going to accompany me to Kansas and establish a new era for the Hickoks. A new homestead, a new farm and life. No, not just a farm, a new start that will be the foundation of what will be our empire, a Hickok empire.
Lorenzo kept his glass in the air, studying my eyes for the reaction he was looking for, until silence and disbelief took over what could have been a celebration. I couldn't fake enthusiasm, nor could I pass up a drink at this time of day. I threw back the whiskey, which burned down my throat and left a dry, bitter taste in my mouth. At that moment, Captain Charles Hudson passed by. I could see the woman on his arm was drunk and likely unaware of what a terrible choice she was making.
Are you talking to an actual human being, Hickok?
Hudson shouted, his slurred words betraying any attempt to hide his inebriation.
You see that beanpole, Mary? He's the strongest son of a bitch you'll find from here to Chicago. But he talks to mules. Talks to them like they're his little friends.
I glanced at my brother, who hated direct conflict, as he took a sip from the whiskey bottle while I held my tongue.
Well, I like the look of him,
the woman said, pausing in her stagger to size me up. I could smell the alcohol on her breath, thick and sweet.
Don't get close, Mary,
Hudson warned, pulling her closer.
His mule stink will get on you.
He laughed as he pulled the woman toward his boat.
Ignore him, James,
Lorenzo said, shaking his head.
He's a fool, and this is why you need to come with me. You are above this kind of treatment.
Despite my brother's fears, I had never allowed my current circumstances to define me. The more I hated my job, the more I knew I was bound for greater things, and the less personally I took the insults. So long as it paid my ticket to freedom, and Hudson didn't take out his woman problems out on my back, just the sight of him pierced my fresh wounds, causing me to arch and feel the abrasion of my shirt on raw flesh.
What's the matter?
Asked Lorenzo, standing in response to the small reveal of pain. He knew I didn't complain about wounds, and that the worse the injury, the more quiet I became. Apparently, he knew the language of my eyes as they tracked Hudson until he disappeared inside his boat with the drunken Mary.
He hurt you, didn't he?
It's nothing.
Let me see.
No, I'm fine. I can handle myself, I explained. And I don't have time to go to Kansas now. I can put up with Hudson for another month or two, just until I have enough cash for my trip west. I'm sure I'll pass through Kansas on my way to California. Maybe I can ride with you and the family then, just to watch out for you.
I noticed Lorenzo's face transforming into our father's. He always looked the most like him, broad forehead, high cheekbones narrowing dramatically to a pointed chin. He had begun to grow a goatee, but he was rarely as serious as our father. Yet at that moment, his eyes darkened with intolerance and his face grew hard.
Damn it, James! You can go to California later!
Lorenzo cried, frustration boiling over.
I need your help now. Mother is not getting any younger.
What about Horace? Why isn't he helping?
You know Horace. He's no good out in the country. I need someone who can hunt, handle themselves on the trail, and protect us.
His words hung heavy in the air, the weight of our family's expectations pressing down on him, and I felt the pull of loyalty tugging at my heart. I took the bottle of whiskey from him, filled my glass, and drank.
Why do we need a new homestead anyway?
I asked, wincing at the whiskey. For some reason, my brother bought bad whiskey to celebrate.
Mom seems like she's finally settled in town. She doesn't have to worry about waking up before dawn to milk cows. The last thing we need to do is push Mother beyond her limit, like Father did. He had no business taking her to Illinois and buying a farm.
That's why we need to do this,
argued Lorenzo.
We can provide Mother an easier life, a nice home like Father always promised her. We aren't going to own land to simply farm. We're going to be land barons. We'll start with a few acres with the money left over from selling the farm and buy up more land as we go.
What if we fail like Father? I countered. He would have lost the farm if he hadn't died.
Then we sell our land to immigrants for a profit. We have nothing to lose except our youth and opportunity.
I have bigger plans, Lorenzo,
I said, unwilling to call him by our father's name, as much out of spite as for the sake of comfort. I don't want any kind of life that enslaves me to one piece of dirt and one routine until death.
Lorenzo found the stump upon which I used to smoke a pipe on the few occasions we returned early, and I had the time to observe the passengers going to and fro from the docks. The pretty ones and the civilized ones mixed in with the thieves and scoundrels that made up society, no matter where you went. But my brother found no such solace in my reflective stump and sat forward, cradling his head in his hands as if it might fall and break with all of its foolish plans.
I can't do this without you, James,
he finally said.
I need you to help me get started. I owe this to Mother. We owe it to her to give her something more than the little house and small-minded people she's trapped with. All she can do is talk about Dad's big dreams of moving west and his promise to build her a big house with a beautiful view of God's creation and never having to ruin her soft hands by toiling. He never came through for her, but we can.
What does Mother think of this plan? I asked.
She's excited. I think the idea is helping her not miss Dad so much. Listen, I've been driving a coach to Colorado and see new immigrants traveling with real hope and dreams, and taking whatever piece of land they want. With a little work and patience, it's anyone's for the taking. Why should the Hickoks be left back in a little town like Homer, Illinois, in the trail dust of immigrants' dreams?
A woman's scream suddenly pierced the air. A moment later, the drunken Mary came storming out, and after catching us looking, she yelled,
What are you staring at? All you canal men are the same, just a bunch of animals.
Some are tame, some aren't, I replied with a chuckle.
How dare you?
Drunken Mary walked up to me and slapped my face. I was surprised. I saw the slap coming and assumed the woman's hand would barely reach its mark, so intoxicated was she. But her palm made a perfect clap across my cheek. Lorenzo covered his mouth in laughter until he caught sight of something in the distance, and his face darkened.
Here comes the beast himself,
said Lorenzo.
And he doesn't look happy. Really, James? This is the life you've chosen for yourself instead of a life of freedom on the plains? Maybe we should go into your stable and wait for this storm to pass.
No,
I said firmly. I don't run from anyone.
I didn't know what to do. I spent the past 24 hours trying not to hate my captain and failing miserably. And now I was irritated with my brother for trying to control my life.
Where is she?
Hudson seethed as he stomped toward us, his feet thudding heavily. I pointed toward the cabins offshore. Hudson approached me, shaking a fist in my face.
Don't you dare look at me like that! Instead of standing there, I want you to go bring her back!
Hudson demanded.
Did you hear me? I'm the captain, and I want you to drag her back here and treat her like the lying, thieving whore that she is!
That's your business, Captain, not mine, I said, not hiding my smile. And it's a bad business if you ask me. Hudson struck me on the same side of the face as Mary, though he used a clenched fist, which, for my sake, was softened by the fatness of his fingers. It startled me more than it hurt.
Now go get that woman. You owe me for losing Quinn. I want her back in my boat or you're fired.
Hudson threatened. I made eye contact with my brother, and Lorenzo stepped back, having known my temper long enough. I looked at my calloused hands, turned into leather from the pull of ropes 6 hours a day, felt the unhealed lashes on my back, the salt of his animosity unleashed with his latest strike upon my flesh. If I was going to offer up my body and pride as sacrifices, Father would have expected me to do so for a righteous cause, not for a sinful brute like Charles Hudson. Even more than all of that, I considered Benjamin's undignified fate. Yes, I have always been sentimental when it came to animals, but that was just plain wrong.
You really think we can make a new start in Kansas, brother?
I asked Lorenzo.
Yes, I know we can.
Then it's settled, I said, turning to Hudson. I grabbed Hudson by the shirt with one fist and began walking toward the canal. Hudson could do nothing but stumble and hold onto my arm so he didn't fall and further humiliate himself.
What are you doing? What are you going to do? It's all right. I don't care about the woman. Quinn was too much trouble. Good riddance. Now let's talk about this.
My anger over the past few weeks had been building in me like a steam engine being fed the black coal of vitriol. My arms were smokestacks, full of steam, and eager to counter his struggle to free himself from my grip. His duress proved impotent as we made our way to the edge of the canal.
I quit,
I said, grabbing his trousers with my other hand as we reached the canal.
And this is for my mule.
I threw Hudson into the water, his scream quickly swallowed by a large splash.
Help!
He cried, as he flailed like a fish caught in a net. Two mule boys ran up to see the despised captain struggling to control his own buoyancy. I neither had the compassion nor the stomach to stick around, so I left his fate in the hands of the taunting mule boys. When I returned to Lorenzo, the bottle and glasses were packed in his bag.
Does he know how to swim?
He's a boat captain, isn't he?
But I don't hear splashing anymore.
Then we better head to Kansas. Now.
If you enjoyed this podcast, help us keep the Old West alive by signing up for our newsletter about Dead Man's Hand, a Wild Bill multimedia project that my dad, my brother, and I are all currently working on. Besides this podcast, in the newsletter you will learn about the progress of the docudrama series that my dad has been working on for the past 10 years. In the newsletter, you'll also learn about a series of books my dad and I are currently working on that dramatizes Hickok's adventures in an exciting and dramatic way. Besides all of this, you'll also receive access to newly edited clips from the docudrama series, long before the episodes actually premiere. And most importantly, don't forget, the West lives on. As long as you have hope, courage, and a restless hunger for adventure. Thanks for listening.